Être lesbienne au Cameroun.
I don't even know how to put this in words. It's just frightening. Being lesbian in Cameroon, you have to hide all the time.
No gay!
Everywhere!
No gay!
No gay!
You don't know who is telling the police what, and they can come and burst at your door at any time.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Equal wedding bells ring in the UK, Puerto Rican lesbians demand marriage recognition, and a lesbian activist escapes from Cameroon. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael Lebeau.
And I'm Kristen Million.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 29th, 2014. The first same-gender couples have legally married in England and Wales. The weddings began at a minute past midnight on March 29th when they became legal in several cities across the UK, including London, Brighton, Birmingham, Manchester, Cardiff, and Sheffield. Same-gender couples have been able to enter into less-than-equal civil partnerships since 2005. Marriage equality legislation was enacted last July, but March 29th was the first day that same-gender couples were legally able to tie the knot. Several elated couples shared photos of their wedding ceremonies on Twitter, while rainbow flags flew atop public buildings in several cities to celebrate the historic moment. The UK has already recognized couples legally married in other jurisdictions. Couples in civil partnerships will have them converted to marriage by the end of the year. Scotland enacted a similar marriage equality bill in March, and couples will be able to legally marry there later this year. There is thus far no movement toward marriage equality in Northern Ireland.
The pursuit of civil marriage equality continues elsewhere. A lesbian couple in Puerto Rico filed suit this week demanding that the U.S. territory recognize their legal marriage performed in Massachusetts in 2004. Ada Conde Vidal and Yvonne Alvarez Velez have been a couple for nearly 14 years. But a 1999 amendment to Puerto Rico's civil code defines marriage as heterosexual only. Conde, a lawyer licensed to practice in the Commonwealth, charges in the couple's lawsuit that Puerto Rico's refusal to recognize their marriage violates the equal protection and due process guarantees of the U.S. Constitution. Its arguments rely heavily on the June 2013 landmark U.S. Supreme Court ruling in the Windsor case that struck down key provisions of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. That law had denied federal recognition to legally married lesbian and gay couples. The couple points out that Alvarez cannot legally adopt Conde's young daughter, and if Conde becomes incapacitated, Alvarez would have no say in decisions ranging from the child's medical treatment to education. The suit, filed at the U.S. District Court of Puerto Rico in San Juan, charges that the Commonwealth is causing the plaintiffs severe humiliation, emotional distress, pain, suffering, psychological harm, and stigma. Conde told the LGBT news outlet, The Washington Blade, that as a U.S. citizen, I have the same rights in the Constitution, no matter where I am, in a territory, a commonwealth, or a state. I'm claiming my full citizenship and equality as any other citizen in the United States of America.
U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder announced this week that the marriages of gay and lesbian couples legally performed in Michigan during the brief number of hours last week that the civil institution was open to them will be recognized by the federal government. A U.S. district judge struck down the state's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples on March 21st. More than 300 couples tied the knot the following day, until an appeals court issued what has become an indefinite stay of the ruling while Michigan officials appeal. But Republican Governor Rick Snyder said this week that state benefits won't be available to those couples while the appeal works its way through the federal courts. Those benefits include spousal health insurance, joint adoption, access to pension plans, and the ability to file joint state tax returns. Lesbian and gay Michigan couples join about 1,300 of their counterparts in Utah, whose marriages, while recognized by the federal government, are also similarly in state legal limbo.
Elsewhere, the latest example of how aggressively homophobic Russian society has become since the enactment last year of a law outlawing the so-called promotion of non-traditional sexual orientation came this week in the Siberian city of Irkutsk. Several homophobic thugs assaulted a group of students who were wearing Irish-themed costumes at a flash mob event celebrating St. Patrick's Day. Some participants wore the traditional Celtic men's skirt, leading the thugs to believe the flash mob was a gay event. A security camera shows several people being knocked to the ground and then repeatedly struck while down. Russian police reported 12 arrests. Some students were injured, and a teacher suffered a concussion.
A similar no-promo-homo law was introduced this week in the former Soviet Republic of Kyrgyzstan. While those who violate the Russian law are subject to sometimes substantial fines, the Kyrgyz bill would punish with up to a year in jail anyone whose statements through the internet, telecommunications, or the media could create a positive attitude to unconventional sexual orientation. No-promo-homo bills are also being considered in Lithuania and Ukraine.
Activists in Uganda are reporting that at least 17 young people, all under the age of 25, have attempted suicide since the enactment in late February of the draconian anti-homosexuality law. It's not known how many succeeded. Private consensual adult same-gender sex was already illegal in the East African country. The new law punishes repeat offenders with up to life in prison, criminalizes the advocacy of LGBT rights, and requires citizens to report suspected homosexuals to the police. Uganda LGBT activist Pepe Julian Onziemba told GayStar News this week that his biggest fear now are mob attacks, as homophobes will use the anti-homosexuality law to justify them. "The law doesn't allow you to go attack people. It's a badge of violent ignorance," he said. "They will attack anyone who they suspect is gay. This was happening before it was made law, and it will only increase." Religious leaders are contributing to that violence, although they would no doubt deny that intent. A march to abolish homosexuality was held in the West Budama area of eastern Uganda this week. A video posted on YouTube shows an unidentified man in a pastor's collar exhorting the crowd.
Dama!
No gay!
Everywhere!
No gay!
No gay!
No gay!
No gay!
No gay!
Hallelujah!
Another abolish homosexuality march is reportedly scheduled for the coming week in Kampala. Some Uganda clerics have taken to social media to call such marches a pride to truly be proud of.
Harsh anti-gay laws in Uganda and also in Nigeria seem to be fueling homophobia in other parts of Africa. The latest is in Ethiopia, where a draft proposal would increase penalties for same-gender sex beyond the current 15 years in prison. The new legislation would amend Ethiopia's pardon and amnesty law by grouping private consensual adult gay sex with other non-pardonable offenses, such as corruption, human trafficking, smuggling, rape, and terrorism. The LGBTQ Nation news outlet reported that the country's Council of Ministers has approved the measure, and equality activists fear that it will pass in Parliament because of that endorsement.
U.S. anti-gay forces have pretty much given up on stopping marriage equality and are increasingly trying to derail LGBT rights by turning the notion of discrimination on its head. Conservative groups are now claiming that banning bias against sexual minorities violates people's religious freedom. And proponents apparently enjoyed their first victory this week. By overwhelming margins, both chambers of the Tennessee legislature approved the Religious Viewpoints Anti-Discrimination Act, which allows students in state-funded schools to discriminate against gay people on religious grounds. The bill now heads to Governor Bill Haslam for his expected signature. Opponents call it a license to discriminate. The measure specifies that a student may express beliefs about religion in homework, artwork, and other written assignments free from discrimination based on the religious content of their submissions. It also requires that students not be penalized or rewarded on account of the religious content of the student's work. The bill also appears to establish special speaking engagements for students to share their religious beliefs at official school functions. The American Civil Liberties Union warns that the measure, crosses the line from protecting religious freedom into creating systematic imposition of some students' personal religious viewpoints on other students. A broader bill that would have allowed businesses in Tennessee to discriminate against LGBT people was shelved in February.
In better news for sexual minorities, Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley is expected to sign into law a bill that makes it illegal to discriminate against transgender people in employment, housing, credit, and public accommodations. Such protections already exist for transgender people in the counties of Howard, Montgomery, Baltimore, and the city of Baltimore. Carrie Evans of Equality Maryland noted that enactment of the statewide legislation came more than 8 years after it was first introduced. She said in a statement that passage was the result of so many people and organizations, transgender individuals and their families, showing up and telling their stories year after year.
And finally, the British website Pink News compiled a list of the calamities that fringe equality opponents say are sure to follow the first civil marriages of same-gender couples in England and Wales. They warn that religious institutions will be forced to marry lesbian and gay couples, which is clearly prohibited by specific language in the marriage equality legislation. Doomsday scenarios also include the legalization of pedophilia, incest and bestiality, natural disasters on a biblical scale, a resurrected Jesus being forced to marry a man, and gay people gleefully digging up corpses to celebrate National Necrophilia Day.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 29th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Kristen Million.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
Inside the crisis in Cameroon, later in the program. Our queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason has discovered mysterious lesbian poetry and a poetic lesbian mystery.
Walk into any LGBT bookstore and you'll find two major sections of lesbian literature, lesbian mysteries and lesbian poetry. Some might describe these as highbrow and lowbrow, but the fact is that both can enclose you in a lesbian world. In full disclosure, I tend more toward poetry than mystery, but I was delightfully surprised to find that one can contain the other. In reading Nicole Brassard's latest volume of poetry, White Piano, Coach House Books, 2013, I was drawn into the mystery, the unknown, the internal. Nicole Brassard is a French-Canadian lesbian feminist poet who has authored more than 30 books since 1965 and has an international reputation as an experimental poet and for her incisive lesbian thinking. She is quoted as saying, I think the wild love between two women is so totally inconceivable that to talk or write that in all its dimension, one almost has to rethink the world to understand what it is that happens to us, and we can rethink the world only through words. Nicole's native language is French. White Piano is beautifully translated by Robert Magels and Aaron Moore. As I read through The White Piano, I was swept into the lyricism of her language, into the worlds beneath her words, and into the cadences that were familiar, yet new. Consider, for instance, she'd had 20 years to learn the slippage between the words woman and reality, between universe and room of one's own. Several times her body became lodged in the word at space. Initiating herself into enigmas and the living womb of women, 20 years to transcribe paragraphs of eternity, an intimacy of ink wash in the material of the present. White Piano is aptly titled, I found my mind dancing across the ivory keys and resting in circular chambers. It made me think about mystery and am rethinking the world through words. Joan Timberlake's lesbian mystery, No Corpse is an Island, from Blue Feather Books, 2013, is the opposite of experimental poetry, in that everything is spelled out in language that is straightforward and accessible. This is Joan Timberlake's first lesbian mystery. She writes under the nom de plume Gato Timberlake. In her book, we meet a private investigator who goes by her last name, Taylor. Taylor lives in a row home in Baltimore, Maryland, and is investigating the death of her roommate's fiancé, Stan, who is a bit of a philanderer. Stan is also a graduate student in botany, who was writing his dissertation on the aquatic vegetation surrounding Grafton Island in Chesapeake Bay. His research and demands for stricter regulations had put him at odds with many other residents who finally could see themselves profiting from the sales of the properties. She describes her lesbian identity cleverly. "I refuse to use the 70s cop-out androgynous, but if I may be so bold, because this could be construed as an ego trip, I believe that I defy labels of any kind. Perhaps I'm a Futch or a Bem. But I picture myself as yet to be identified, a gender transcendent or a gender mutt, a hybrid." In the course of unraveling and solving the mystery of this man who so many seemingly have motives to murder, Timberlake adroitly takes us through the interconnected fabric of her lesbian life, including her relationships with her detective brother, the numerous friends who she has made family with, the memories of her deceased parents, in particular her mother, and ultimately a love affair with another woman. In weaving this tale, Timberlake shows us that everything is connected, just like the fragile ecosystem of the Chesapeake Bay, and she does so convincingly, with heart. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra!
Have you checked our website lately? For now playing information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to thiswayout.org.
Think of the West Central African Republic of Cameroon as a twisted microcosm of the continent. There's varied geography, cultural diversity, government corruption, and official homophobia. It takes courage to be a political activist there, but still, sometimes the best strategy is retreat. That became the only option for one lesbian who shared her story with This Way Out's Steve Pride.
In Cameroon, being gay is against the law. If the person who shares your love shares your gender, you'll be hunted down. You'll be imprisoned. Until recently, Gertrude worked discreetly for Alternatives Cameroon, the first and only LGBT center in her homeland. She doesn't speak English, but with the help of a translator, shares her story.
My name is Olatunji Karimou.
Moi, c'est Gertrude Mirabel Metiegoum.
So she's saying that I am Gertrude Mirabel Mangoubou.
And when did you know you were lesbian?
Ça fait aujourd'hui comment je suis.
Well, I have been actively living this life for 22 years now, and I was always among the women, and from the very early age, as early as 5, I was attracted to women.
What are the challenges of being a lesbian in Cameroon, and especially working at what is a kind of secret gay and lesbian center?
Être lesbienne au Cameroun.
Well, I don't even know how to put this in words. It's just frightening. Being lesbian in Cameroon, you have to hide all the time. You go out and you look at everybody like everybody knows that you're gay. You don't know who is telling the police what, and they can come and burst at your door at any time.
Travailler, moi qui travaille dans une.
Just working in Cameroon as a lesbian is hard because you constantly thinking that people will know, so people have that fear. But working for Alternative Cameroon is even harder because it already has that tag of being lesbian and gay friendly. But inside the building of Alternative Cameroon, she feels more confident. She has these people around and knowing also how it will help other people, give them more strength, and she feels more courageous being inside. But once outside, although she has all this training to know how to respond, how to react, she's still fearful. You know, it's like being outside in the wild with people, eyes all around you. So she feels fearful every time she steps out of the building.
A lot of people don't know that much about Cameroon. What are the repercussions of being gay there, both legally and societal?
La loi camerounaise, comme j'ai dit tantôt,
being lesbian in Cameroon is pretty much a sentence you have dangling on your head all the time. They do have this penal code 345 bis, that stipulates that anybody that's been caught having sex with somebody else of the same gender could go from 5 to 10 years in prison, and that was before, and recently it has been extended or added to. Now it's from 5 to 15 years if you get caught or if you have been accused of being lesbian.
Oui, ça c'est la loi.
That's the law, and that's one thing. But the reality is they're not actually following the law through the truth, because all it needs is for somebody to go to the police and say, oh, this one is a lesbian, and that's it. That's enough. They will come to your door, break your door, and you're in trouble. So the simple fact that somebody could just go to the police and say, oh, this person here is having or is a lesbian or a gay, that's enough for the police to come and arrest you. And that's what she called the arbitrary arrest.
I am a little hesitant to bring this up. This is very personal. I asked about corrective rape, because we don't hear that term very often. Is that prevalent?
Oui. Le viol, ça, oui. Ici,
It's happening. It's happening a lot. And they're getting even a little more sophisticated. You know, they will go online and pretend that they're gay and lesbian because they know that they're hiding. And, of course, they use the online also. They will go trying to match up, to connect with people. And then they will have a rendezvous. But then you find yourself facing 5, 7 people and they raped you. And there is no way for you to know if that person you're chatting with is a real person that's in love with you or want you, but you just have to take the risk. And it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, they do that. They just go online, pretend that they want to be friends with you, and once you go out to meet with them, well, you find yourself in this situation, and it's happening a lot.
Is it too personal? Can I ask about your attack?
Oui, je vais le faire pour que les gens comprennent ou sachent ce qui se passe au Cameroun. Oui. Mm-hmm.
She thought she won't talk about it anymore, but she will do it just so people can understand what's going on. Because you said it before you start, people don't know much about it. So she's willing to talk about it because she thinks people need to know what's happening.
Ça, j'étais un peu plus jeune que ça.
I was younger, way younger.
And
in our group at the convent, we heard about one of our friends that was sick. So I was with two other of my friends, and we decided to go pay a visit to that friend. So the way to get to the convent, you get to a point, and there is two ways. There is a longer way and a shortcut, but it has to go through a stadium. It's a little darker, but there is a police station very close to the stadium, and they thought that it would be safer with the police station there. So they decided to go through that darker road through the stadium with the police station next to it.
Oui. C'était vers 19h.
It was about 7 p.m.
Et nous sommes,
and 7 p.m. is dark over there already.
Yeah. Là, en plein centre,
just as we were crossing right in the middle of the stadium, all of a sudden we heard some men's voice, hey, you lesbian girls, come over here. And then they stopped and they saw the men coming out from the obscurity. And they knew right there that they were in danger. And they held at them like lesbian, lesbian. But she knew that the two other girls were not lesbian. So she found herself in a position to defend herself. She thinks she has to. She did a little bit of martial art and she tried to fight. But of course, it was pointless. I was pretty much the one trying to fight, and all I remember that at some point I got knocked down, I got knocked out. I do remember there were about four men, but I could hear more people coming, but I cannot say for sure. I woke up about a week later in the hospital, and I heard that one of the girls was dead due to the attack. And till today, the third one never recovered 100%.
What do you want people to know about Cameroon?
There is so much we could say about Cameroon, but for the sake of the cause I am fighting for, I will keep it to talking about lesbians. And I really want it for people to know, understand that we do exist, we're real, we're there. And as I've seen in Los Angeles for the few days I've been here, I just wish we could just live like that and be able to be ourselves. But unfortunately, we're still hiding.
What's it been like to be here, to be in West Hollywood and Los Angeles and see this community?
Wow.
Why, you heard it. The very first feeling is, wow. Oh, wow.
Et la deuxième, c'était une goutte de larmes pour nous.
Of course, after seeing all this, I couldn't help. I cried a little bit.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank
Merci
you.
D'être venu. Merci pour la réponse. And she said thank you too.
Gertrude was profiled in the documentary Born This Way, outing herself to her country and the world. So she now lives in San Francisco while seeking political asylum. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Horizons Foundation is administering a fund for LGBTI refugees who've left Cameroon and, like Gertrude, are seeking to relocate to the San Francisco Bay Area. There's info about that and the documentary that Steve mentioned at BornThisWayDocumentary.com. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, Kristen Mellion, Janet Mason, Sarah Sweeney, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to Kadamu Alatunji. You heard music from Playing for Change, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Yavanna Foundation, a bequest from the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and by listeners like you. Log on to thiswayout.org for links to our blog, Facebook, and Google Plus pages. You can also hear This Way Out on iTunes. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WOMR Provincetown, Massachusetts, KVSC St. Cloud, Minnesota, CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're all going to stay tuned.